Welcome to the Two Regular Teachers podcast. My name is Rick Kayla Thompson.
My name is Adam Lavaz. Thanks for joining us for episode 35, and we are on the home stretch, mate. We've pretty much got 2 weeks to go until the end of term, and the droopy eyes and the big sighs are ever present in the staff room at about this time in term two.
Yeah, the old moods, mood swings, a few flus coming in at them, you know. It's worth touching on. I'm sure our listeners hopefully are nodding their heads right now. Yeah. A little bit of, you know, antsiness on email here and there. Mind you, Adam, I'm always civil.
I
think so.
I think I'm civil too. I think the one where you see it the most is where people are almost, you know, recess and lunchtime, almost dragging their feet over to the staff room. They're going to the fridge a bit slower. Mm. You know, that they're making their lunch a bit slower. They're eating it slower. It's you can see,
And it doesn't just apply to teachers. It's the ES staff. I know the the office workers. Oof, can they pack a punch?
They can pack a punch. They're quite happy to give the old backhander.
Yep. If any are listening out there, with all due respect. Of course.
No, and probably because I don't get things in on time anyway. But it is that time of the term where, you know, our reports are in and they're going out. I don't know. Do yours go out next week?
No, Adam. I think they go out in the final week. I think. And obviously they'll be released online through our new system, through the parent portal.
Oh, very interested to see. Sorry to interject there. I'm very interested to see how that goes, mate. If it crashes or if it all works really well.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I am too. It's also that time after, you know, we've done podcasts over the last few weeks during NAPLAN, then assessment time, now reporting, and it's kind of coming into that time where it's like, phew, back to teaching now. But you can't, but on the other side of that, you're a bit knackered as well, aren't you? A bit tired.
You are. And I think in the back of your mind, you're going, do I start something new? Because I think if you start something new in the final 2 weeks, you can get it going, but then they're away for 2 weeks and can come back and you've almost got to go over it all again. Do you just kind of do bits and pieces, a bit of finishing off, a bit of that stuff to get them through to the end and then start afresh in term three?
Well, I think sometimes we know some students struggle to, you know, like they kind of lose that momentum when there's holidays in between. But I kind of disagree with the, you know, finishing stuff at the end of a term. Why can't we carry over? And I know that we've got a few subjects that we'll be carrying over, or a few topics into term three, which is a good thing. But you're right, it's hard to want to start anything completely fresh when there's a bit of burnout there.
There is, and for the kids as well, they've got a bit of burnout as well. So, and look, before we get started today too, mate, I did want to throw out there that I mentioned last week that I was going to Eddie and Will's to try it out. Didn't get that opportunity because Nigel, I'm sorry, mate, I didn't listen. He told me to book and I didn't. And I thought, no, I'll be able to go down there at the right time. Went in there, packed to the rafters. And look, while I was disappointed not to try out the food and things like that, I was actually really happy for Nigel and Matt that Eddie Mills was packed to the rafters and they were doing wonderful business. So if anyone else out there wants to go, make sure you don't be as stupid as me. Make sure you book.
Jeez, we could almost be on a commission here, Adam.
We could be.
We are giving them one hell of a plug.
I'm expecting some sort of gift card in a couple of weeks' time for a free calamari burger. But anyway, mate, we do have lots of wonderful topics to get through, so let's get going.
Adam, our first topic tonight comes from an article in The Age that was published last weekend. A lot of people would have seen it. And it was talking about what the writer called the Hermione effect in reference to Hermione Granger in Harry Potter. And it was about some teachers in a couple of schools in Victoria banning students from raising their hands. Now, the word ban's a bit extreme because...
it is.
If you read the article, it's not really about a ban. It's about changing the practice of how we teach and not having kids put up their hands. Mm. So I thought, well, that's a really good regular topic for us to talk about.
It is.
Just to give some background on the article, it talked about the habit of kids putting up their hands in class. It kind of made a generalisation that when kids put up their hands, the teachers automatically choose the smart kids who have the answers to the questions straight away. Mm. A couple of things that a couple of schools are trialling. One was at Frankston High, where the teacher was writing all the names of the students on icy pole sticks, and then she would draw one out randomly when she needed a question answered. Mm. It's an interesting process that they're going through. They're trying to encourage the kids to not just answer questions, but to ask questions. Mm. And also, by, like, if their name comes out on the icy pole stick, I think the idea is that they are expected to answer the question. They can't just say, I don't know, and opt out. Now, I do kind of agree with that. But then you think of, there are students who are just not comfortable talking in front of a group. Now, I know that's something that kind of they have to learn and has to be taught to a degree. There are other ways, though, I think, for students who don't feel comfortable with speaking in front of this, a pack of students. Yeah. to answer. And look, we've got to take responsibility as teachers, don't we, to not just ask for that basic recall type answer.
You're right. And look, that way of doing it too, what happens if it's a new topic, you pull that kid's name out and that kid genuinely hasn't got their head around what the topic is yet? You know, you might be doing something in maths, you might be doing something about data collection, you pull that one out. Excuse me, Johnny, can you answer this? And they literally look at you, I don't know yet. I actually haven't got my head around it. And that idea of them saying, you're not allowed to say, I don't know. Well, that makes it really hard for the kids. And that does put them under some sort of pressure.
So perhaps with that process then if a child's name, and I'm thinking for the younger students that we teach, if a child's name came out that you picked out on the icy pole stick and they were unsure, then part of our teaching is to help them ask a question then.
Yes.
So instead of opting out, we teach the process of how to ask a good question.
So maybe if they are picked out, they say, I'm still getting my head around it. The question I have is, how is this certain concept done or things? And then that discussion can go from there. I think that's fantastic. I actually think that's a positive. Rather than say, I don't get it and I don't know, they can actually then throw it back to the class. It doesn't have to be to the teacher. Throw it out to the class and go, look, to the class, I'm finding this, you know, blah, blah, blah. What's going on? Then the kids can join in and support them.
Our school has a motto, Adam. One of our mottos is that mistakes are welcome,
you know,
and as long as we know how to fix them. And there's a quote from Jenny Roth, who's a principal at Derrynya Primary School in Victoria, who said that her teachers, or teachers in general, are moving away from questions that require basic recall. And I think agree with that. Over my career, I've learned, and I keep getting reminded by coaches I've worked with in that, about how to try and spread the questioning and to encourage kids to ask, encourage us, and then to encourage the kids to answer why questions.
Yes, yeah.
And if they're not quite on the mark, that's part of the learning process. A mistake is welcome.
Because they're not going to get it right all the time, mate. I mean, we don't get it right as teachers all the time. We're constantly talking about the fact that we're lifelong learners as teachers. Students are going to be lifelong learners as students, you know. And if they don't get it spot on, throw it out to the class. Okay, so that's, we're getting towards there. Does anyone else have, pull a name out of the hat, etc.? I actually think that's really good, and I think it does foster that kid not being able to just put up their hand and go, what are 5 fives or the 25? You know, they need to think more deeply about it.
It says in the article, having the smart kids answer every question can fool teachers into believing that the whole classroom, as opposed to those more vocal, are learning. I mean, that to me, a smart teacher doesn't think that the whole class have just got it just because one clever student like Hermione is always answering.
And again, that's such a general comment, isn't it, mate? Mm. It's such a general, having the smart kid answer it means everyone's getting it. Well, what sort of teacher thinks that? Mm. I would automatically think, well, clearly that student gets what the answer is. Mm. But then you need to go further. Do they actually get the concept, though? If I were to send them back to their table to work with, you know, their resource things, can they actually show me how they got there? There's so much more to it than that.
I've got a great bunch of kids this year, Adam, that I believe put their hand up a lot, but they're also putting their hand up because they're enthusiastic.
Yes.
Not because they're necessarily the smartest.
Yep.
Look, just getting back to the kids who aren't that comfortable with commenting, I just want to say, I've used Edmodo before. So instead of saying, right, you know, let's question time, say, go to Edmodo, write a post in our grade space about your thinking on this topic. And then you have to go to someone else's post and reply back to what they're thinking.
Great.
And that's a great opportunity for those kids that don't like speaking up. They're still speaking in front of a group, or they're publishing in front of a group, and those kids dive on that.
Yeah, it takes away that stigma of making a mistake in front of 25 people, in front of them, and they're all turning around looking at you. If what you have to put forward isn't spot on, and then that other student goes to comment to support you, you're not going to feel embarrassed, you're not going to feel worried that, hold on, this whole class is looking at me and I got it wrong. That they can feel empowered by that and actually take that learning away from them and bring it back to the classroom to put into to their learning in the future.
Absolutely. There's a final quote from Dr. John Key, who's in the Graduate School of Education, senior lecturer. I won't comment now. Go and have a look at it, because I think he kind of sums up this whole topic. One final one is, do we always have to have hands up anyway, Adam? I know during our serial novel discussions, I encourage the kids just to call out answers, because we're enjoying the book.
Mm.
And I think the hands up thing, I was taught this by a coach once at a previous school, that, you know, the serial novel time is enjoying reading discussion time. Mm. So answers can just come flying out when you ask them. And I really try and do that as opposed to hands up.
Yeah, and I think it, again, comes back to fostering that discussion. You don't have to stop reading necessarily really quickly in the hand up. Yes, they just bang, off they go, and then the discussion can start. Before you know it, there's a whole heap of learning going on, and all you've done is actually started reading the book. So
put your hand up if you enjoyed that segment.
So, Rick, the next topic I want to talk about is something that troubles me. When I was a student in primary school, and I don't know how you felt about it, I loved the opportunity to be creative. Those afternoons or those activities where you didn't necessarily have free rein, but you had an opportunity to get a topic or get a concept and just work with it. Cutting out, sticking together, making something
Do you? I don't remember really having those opportunities.
I didn't have those opportunities. No. I had them a little bit, but I just remember having these opportunities to do different things, you know, and particularly I remember homework was one thing for us where we had to make things, you know, we had to make like a cannonball, like a shooting cannonball thing, and just things that we had that creative outlet. Off the top of the podcast, that you mentioned that, you know, we have NAP plan assessment and all these things in this term. Is the focus, which comes from above, which really comes from the top, on data and making the data really good, is that focus killing off the opportunity for students to have that creative outlet? Now, I know I'm being a little bit extreme there. I'm not saying it's completely killed off, they're encouraging it or anything like that, but is it even subconsciously teachers are pushing that creative outlet aside for the fact that we need to have our data where we need to teach our kids to do the NAP plan and be assessed and make the progression? Is that taking away that opportunity for the students to be creative?
Maybe it's the way that we promote this time of year, because as teachers we kind of feel like we have to. Mm. Now we can't speak for all schools, but perhaps around this time of year when it's assessment time, NAPLAN before that, reporting, we're kind of putting onto the kids. We kind of act like it's one of the most important yeah. times of the year,
yeah.
and you could argue that it's not one of the most creative times of the year.
Yes.
Because of it's all assessment by number, really, isn't it?
Mm.
So, yeah, you could argue that creativity is not being valued in that way.
And in saying that, though, is I'm certainly not saying, you know, that data is not important and it's not crucial to what we're doing, but does it come back to the teacher? Do the teachers need to sit down and actually look at what they're doing and go, can we actually present this assessment? Can we present this NAP plan practice in a creative manner? Do we need to put it back on ourselves a little bit?
Perhaps. What about that area of the curriculum that we have to report to in Victoria and in Australia? Design, creativity and technology.
Yeah.
And going back to what you just said you used to do as a student for homework, why do those sort of tasks have to be for homework?
Exactly.
You know,
why
aren't they happening in the classroom? And once again, we can't speak for all schools, and I bet there's some people listening who are like, yep, we are doing creative stuff. We're designing. We're, you know, because there's so many ways that you can bring in literacy and numeracy anyway into that area.
Yeah. There is, and I agree. But then on the flip side of that, if I play the devil's advocate, you know, there's such a focus on reading, writing, maths. You know, you've got to 5 of those every week. You think about it, you get 25 lessons, you know, 3 to 4 of those are APT. You got 15 of those going there. All of a sudden, you got a couple of lessons left to try and fit that in. But what we want to talk about is an article that was written probably 3 years ago by a 14-year-old student from America who talked about how schools are killing creativity. Now, he has gone very much for the extreme end. Now, how schools are killing creativity, I would argue that that's not necessarily the case. But what I really liked that came out of it was that we need to listen to our students more. And that when new reforms are brought in, when new ideas for education are brought in, the students themselves and the kids that are coming through they don't really have a voice. It's made by, you know, the people at the top there who are employed, who get the big money to say, this is what you're going to teach, and this is how you're going to teach it. Are we actually missing the point? Are we actually not going to the students enough to get some ideas about how we can engage them more?
Well, I think primary schools are a lot. I think primary schools that we know of are trying to really get student voice put into the curriculum more. We can't speak for secondary schools as much, can we?
No.
We know we've got some secondary teachers who listen regularly, so perhaps they could get back to us this week about it. Because I kind of think as the students move through to the higher levels of high school that they are really working towards the final exams, aren't they?
They really are. There it is. They're working towards their final exams. So it's an interesting one for me, because I feel like that sometimes with the focus on the data, we are running the kids into the ground, and, you know, well before the end of a term, they are running out of gas. And do we need to relook at that?
Perhaps. This writer, this 14-year-old writer, like you mentioned, is from the States. We don't know which state and which school system he's coming out of.
Yeah.
But he does have a red hot go and says, you know, once you get to school, you learn to stop questioning the world and to go with the flow, and that there's only one right answer. And he, I don't know, I mean, I think we encourage at our schools our students to ask questions. But at the same time, I don't think they're given an opportunity to investigate these questions enough because of, like you said, the other stuff that we have to do.
Yes.
He does say the why, like the why's question, we were talking about the why questions in the last segment, that you always want to ask and never on the test, and they're omitted. And that's kind of true. It's very rare do you get a why question. I kind of remember doing some why questions back in our university exams when we had to respond to a question about maybe Australian history or something. But gee, that's a long time to wait, isn't it, to get a why question on a test?
It's a very long time to wait. And it actually comes back to our first topic about asking questions. Now, we're getting into the students, we want to ask them questions and we want them to ask about why. But then it's never on anything that they end up doing after that. We want them to question it. We want them to do these things. But it's not often enough. I'm not saying it's not there. But too often, it's omitted. And then off they go and they do that work and stuff. And we're not getting them to question why enough with their work and have that creative outlet.
By the way, I think this young guy wants to get on the Rockstar Education speaking circuit because he's dropped Sir Ken Robinson's name in the article. So he's really got his finger on the pulse.
And that's an old TED one. That's almost 10 years old, that one too. So
it is. So I guess, we'd love to hear your thoughts on whether you think schools are killing creativity. And do you have some experience maybe with other school systems? And was this kid valid in suggesting that the American system is that? Because he sounds really fed up with it. And he does mention that youth of today have fresh ideas. Teachers complain that students are on social networking too much. I disagree with that. You and I are big advocates for social media, used in the right way. I don't know. I think that we're trying here as teachers in this state anyway. I know that we're trying.
We are. So look, like you said off at the end there, if the creative outlet, if you are encouraging kids to do creative things in the classroom, we'd love to hear what you're doing and how you're doing it, because I think it'd be great to share some of those ideas with our listeners. So the third topic for tonight, Rick, is an interesting one in terms of the fact that we've done our reports, and we want to entitle this one Goodbye to Grades, because there are a few schools around the world that are actually looking to abolish grades in favour of student-created and student-developed rubrics. Now, it's a very interesting idea, because I think any time grades come up, it's a touchy subject, because people know, we definitely need the grades, we need this, while other people are not necessarily more open-minded, but more open to the idea of going, no, we don't need these grades, why can't we do things a different way? It is always a sort of a hot topic, isn't it?
Well, it is, Adam, and you mentioned rubrics. A lot of us teachers across the world use rubrics, and kids use them to self-assess. Are you saying that this talks about the rubrics actually being used as an official marker? Is that's the official assessment?
Yeah, I think that's what the official assessment is, that they do their work and that they actually go away and assess themselves and go, well, did I do it like this? Did I do it like that? Now, that's a contentious way of marking themselves because while it does put the power into the students to go, well, here's what I need to do, and if I want to tick this, I need to do it that way, but it does leave the opportunity open for kids to give themselves a bit of a wishy-washy sort of mark and go, I kind of did, so I'll kind of give myself the tick. And it's an interesting one, but I do like the idea of rubrics.
Yeah, me too. I'm going to jump on the positive side here. Is this a really great chance that if the rubric has been designed with heaps of student input and the teachers have helped guide them, then they're self-assessing on the standards that they need to achieve, that they believe, and with some teacher guidance. So then it kind of makes it more authentic then. How authentic if that's actually the mark they get?
Yeah.
Perhaps enthusiasm, engagement would rise? That's the positive side to this.
I agree, mate, because I think if they've set the rubric and set the expectations, then they have a far clearer understanding of what the expectations are because they've set it, haven't they? There is a lot of positive aspects to it.
It says in the article, I think this article is based in the UK that you found, Adam, and it says that the school, the particular school that's been trying it, has been liaising with the college nearby, which I assume is our equivalent of the university, to make sure that they're on the right track with making the standards. They call it competency-based learning, is that right?
Yes, yes, that's right.
So I noticed there was a comment on the blog that suggested that they should take it one step further and be simply telling the college, this is what we're doing with our rubrics. Not checking with them, saying, this is how we're doing it through K-12. Yeah. What are you guys going to do about it?
And we've had that discussion before about unis not being up enough with what the high schools and what things are going on, that they, by the time they do get up to speed, they're 10 years behind. And they catch up, they're still 10 years behind. So I really like that idea of going, sorry, this is what we're doing, this is how we're doing it. You need to then develop the courses for the students to actually do. So I really like that too.
Yeah, and we've talked about, haven't we, in previous podcasts about some of the courses still and subjects at university needing to come forward, along with what's changing in education. Mm. The article has, we'll put on the blog, has some quotes from students who are involved in this, saying that it's great because it's really the rubrics show them what they haven't mastered and what they need to master. I guess it's another way of really having the kids involved in how they're assessed, which we keep saying, I know in our system how important it is, but I don't think we're anywhere near yet that actually being, like the rubric actually being the standard. It's just another piece of assessment you might use, isn't it?
It really is. And what I really like too, where you said that they interviewed some of the kids, that they spoke to, I think her name's Abigail, and she said something about the students that she said, when she wrote a summary about the last book in the Harry Potter series, her classmates are giving her feedback based on the rubric. Now, I know with our school at the moment, we just this week, we discussed that feedback, and that feedback being very explicit and very, you know, almost being straight away, giving it to them straight away so they understand where they're going. I really like that. The kids actually going, here's the rubric, I've read that, and giving that peer assessment to say, what they call a meets, so this means they've met or mastered a certain standard, and finding out, yes, you have, or no, you haven't, and this is why. I really, really like it. It puts that again, we're really big on it, aren't we? That power back into the students' hands.
Yeah, and likewise, Adam, we've been trying it with our narrative writing at the moment, where we like whatever the learning intention is in terms of a part of the narrative writing, the kids have been doing buddy writing and buddy reading with a partner and giving each other feed forward of what they can do based on whatever the focus is, and the kid has just lifted their enthusiasm and we're getting some of the best writing we've had all year easily.
I'll throw it to you. What do you think that is? Do you think that's because it's coming from a peer, that sometimes the teacher's voice can be almost a little bit muted and they want to hear a fresh voice?
I think it's peer, and I also think because it's immediate and the kids don't have to wait, because obviously there's only one of us and it's happening right then. So if I'm not working with them, a peer is, and it's been really successful.
So look, obviously the idea of rubrics is always a positive. The idea of abolishing grades altogether is a very contentious one. I'd love to hear, we'd love to hear from anyone using rubrics and the way that they use it effectively. And also, I think at the end there, the discussion around feedback was a good one too, Rick.
All right, it's anecdote time on Two Regular Teachers. Over to you, Adam.
Always the favourite part of the podcast. Now, reports are out, reports are done. We know what's coming in the next couple of weeks. What's coming, mate?
Well, I'm guessing you're thinking school holidays, Adam.
Yeah, I am thinking school. I'm also thinking student-led conferences.
Ooh.
Now, the big one. Now,
yes. See, ours are next term. That's probably why they're not on my radar.
Right. Okay, so ours are in the last week of term. Now, I just want to talk about it from a teacher's perspective and the build-up. And I reckon the nervousness around student-led conferences, because it's the night where the parents are coming up, they're sitting down, and you've got to get these kids ready with a variety of work samples, the words that they need to say to their parents. And it's always a nerve-wracking experience. I don't know about you, but for me, no matter what parents I've got coming in, if I've known them for years or they're fresh parents, I'm nervous.
Yeah, I still get a bit nervy with some more than others, not necessarily because of the parents, but just maybe that student or the situation, or you know that maybe they haven't been going so well. It is a bit nerve-wracking. I think, have you ever had a student open up a book, and this is giving away some tricks, but actually not a trick, but giving away some faux pas, open up their book and they've chosen that piece of writing they really want to show and you haven't touched it.
Yes.
You just haven't got around to it. You're like, oh, there's no correction on that whatsoever.
Look at the spelling mistakes everywhere and all that sort of stuff.
Parents want to talk about spelling all the time, don't they?
It's a big thing. How's the spelling going? What are they doing?
It's been a big focus at our school, so our school's been talking about it. But sometimes I just think, can we not talk about times tables and spelling just for a little while, please? Yeah.
Why can't they look at the bigger picture? Now, coming back to the faux pas, we have generally, we get obviously our kids to lead it, and we give them almost like a blurb to read. You know, welcome mum and dad to my student-led conference and all that sort of stuff. There's always one kid who gets way too embarrassed and mucks the whole thing up and does the old welcome mum and dad and gets really giggly and stuff, and you're going, looking at him going, it's meant to be professional, and you look at the parents almost apologetic at the parents going, I didn't tell him to do it like this.
It's kind of interesting, because I find that the students who have done that to me in the past are the ones who never act like that in class.
Yes, I agree.
They just completely change in front of their parents.
It's almost they get nervous and mum, this is my reading, and they can't find the spot in their reading where they want to show. it was back there, mate. It's come on, back you go. Now a couple of pages. It's okay. Now it's all right. You know, that sort of one like that. And yeah. you almost get embarrassed for yourself that the parents kind of look yep. at you going, did you tell him to do it like this? Have you, this is sure. what you've been setting him up for. And they haven't done, they haven't not acted like that in the classroom at all year.
Yeah, and getting back to the script, I mean, and this is like the script came in at my old school when we started doing student-led conferences. I mean, really, why do our students need, maybe unless they're preps, yeah. why do they need a script saying, welcome to my conference, mum and dad? Because yeah. as you said before, they yeah. muck it up. Why don't just make them look their parents in the eye and say, yeah. hello, thanks for coming.
Yeah, thanks for, and ours used to have, this is my teacher, Mr. Lavaz, and I got rid of that in mind because I kind of look at him and they go, you've been in the class for 6 months.
Yeah.
The other one I want to bring up too, our student led conferences I find difficult, is the late parents.
Oh,
the ones now,
the first one that's late, you're gone.
You are in big trouble because you're playing catch up. But it's also that, what do you do? Do you, if they've turned up 5 minutes late and you've got a 15-minute window for them, do you just give them the 10 minutes? Do you say, look, I've got 10 now, I've got a break in half an hour, you can come back then? It's a tough one because if you get behind, you are in big trouble.
It's a really iffy one, isn't it? I think it depends. Like if they're pretty late, you can just say, look, 5 minutes and then we'll have to make another time.
Yes.
But you're right, sometimes you're just too nice. I go into the too nice yep. mode, but yep. I just know, particularly, this actually happened to me, Adam, at our first ones we had in February.
Yep.
I think it was my third conference was yep. really late
oh,
and
no.
I never caught up and I was fuming. Yep. I was.
Because it's a knock-on effect, because if that family has kids in other classes that they've got to go to after that, then they're going to be late for those ones. So there's yep. this huge knock-on effect.
Yep.
You really have to be thinking about how you're going to handle
and
it.
And one more before we wrap up, Adam.
Yep.
Let's hope there's no parents listening to this tonight, because it annoys me when the little brother or sister comes along, the little yep. three-year-old is running around grabbing my pens oh. and my whiteboard markers. Control yep. your kids yep. if you bring them in. Yep. It's not my job.
No, it's not. And not only that, you've cleaned up that room for the student-led yeah. conference and they've just gone and ruined the whole thing. Or they get your texts and they're pushing it on the whiteboard, scribbling on it. Then you go to use it the next day and it's run out
and
or
you know
it's
what?
Pushed in.
And then we sort of smile and go, oh, look what they're doing. And underneath I'm going, you put that bloody marker back.
You really are. This is all that. So look, I know it's coming up. You obviously got, as you said, you got yours next term. We got ours in that week. I will say before we finish, and I want to make this very serious, I do enjoy the student-led conferences, and I know that I have a lot of wonderful conversations with them. However, it doesn't mean that I'm not nervous, that there's not one that's being late that you've got to play catch-up on, or that little kid who wants to pick out the basketball out of the sports equipment and boot it around your classroom.
Well, Adam, good luck, and we look forward to hopefully maybe hearing about it in a podcast around that time.
We will. So, mate, that brings it into episode 35. And I know you had a quick thank you wanted to add in the outro, mate.
Yeah, I did, Adam. Well, we both did, didn't we? Thanks to Kim, who we tagged in last week's episode, who teacher librarian, who put a fantastic comment in response to our segment about reading and how to choose books, particularly for the older readers. And Kim, very, very experienced, had some fantastic thoughts. So thanks, Kim.
Yeah, it was wonderful. Yeah,
it was great. And thanks also to Aaron, also, who jumped on and gave us a bit of a comment about his Lenovo laptop that's clapping out as well.
Yeah, it's funny you bring that up. Ours have arrived, but our techie's on until next Tuesday. So I've got to wait till next Tuesday to get it. And I'll tell you what, my Lenovo may be smashed into smithereens very soon. So we better get there on Tuesday.
Well, the old technician, not until Tuesday. Ah, yeah, one of the most important things in the job. Not until Tuesday.
Lazy. Look, mate, I hope everyone has a good week. And from me, I've been Adam Lavaz.
I've been Rick Caleb Thompson, and we've been Two Regular Teachers.